For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, North London derby. Arsenal's aesthetes get kick up Jacksie from Spurs. Gunners' grand plan bamboozled by opponents running at them. Potash is flying team opera. QPR-style booze-filled blowout in Dubai. Now the only thing that can save them. And has English football come full circle as last-place Rangers work off their skin for with a spirited win at Saints? Bottoms up in every sense. Elsewhere, can we play you every week? Say Real to Barcelona after yet another Clásico win. But what awaits them at Old Trafford? And could Spain's only side in Europe soon be Levante? There's news from France and from Serie A. There's Cassano's latest meltdown, post tweets, and much, much more in today's Football Weekly. Sunny smiles aplenty here in the pod as we launch into a roundup of a pretty exceptional weekend of football. Barry, you saw none of it because you were in Rome.
I was in Rome.
Hooray! Yeah. Philippe, you saw plenty of it.
I got you a present.
Yeah?
I got you a present.
You got me a present?
Yeah.
Hey.
You're a big Romophile, as
right,
everyone knows.
Let's have a look at this. I'm unwrapping it.
Throw on a little package.
There we go. It's a big box.
I got you this because I know it's your favourite piazza.
Ooh.
And I think...
Oh, look at that. It's a little targa or targette. It's a little kind of marble. If you read Asterix, the kind of street signs that we have there, like a kind of little marble thing with etched in. It says Piazza Navona, which is a fantastic square, in brackets, Stadio Domiziano, which is what the old Roman square. They used to have naval battles there. They used to flood it and have naval
I think
battles.
You can stick that to your fridge and sit in front of it and pretend, you know, talk about Italian football.
Hey, tell you what.
Be like
the gang
the good old
together.
Days.
Hey, now, also here, thanks, Barry, for that. Also here, Philippe Auclair.
Hello.
Lovely to see you, Philippe. And lovely to see you, Amy Lawrence.
Hello.
Super duper. Item one, North London derby. Here's Arsene Wenger.
If you watched the game, you would see that the moment we went 2-2, we should have been 2-0 up, says Arsene, who's puzzled by how that went.
Can you explain, Amy, what happened?
Thanks, James.
It's a pretty simple answer, I'm thinking.
You forgot the word overall.
I think, James, you caught it quite well at the beginning in your intro by saying, you know, if you watch people who are running, it tends to help in football matches.
Right.
Yeah. First of all, I think Tottenham deserve compliments, obviously, for keeping up. I think I read is their best run since the mid-80s or something like that. Which is
1984, 1985, ending in March 1985, yeah.
An extraordinary achievement for them. But I don't think that there was a massive amount between the two teams. And people who are talking about power shifts and so on, well, it's perhaps a touch early to be, I think, being very dramatic about it. But definitely, I think Spurs were the better team on the day because... You know, Arsene said afterwards that there were problems at both ends of the pitch, which somehow doesn't leave you with a great deal of enthusiasm if your midfield is fairly functional, but you're not particularly effective at the most important areas, then you're going to suffer. And I think it's the same problems that have been dogging Arsene for a while.
Right. I was just going to say, if only they'd had some warning that there might be problems at the back. What is this... Is there just nothing to work with there in terms of the defensive players?
That's what's quite baffling about it. I mean, if you actually look at the individuals involved, the majority of them are full internationals with a fair degree of experience at relatively major football countries. You don't get caps for Spain and Belgium and France and Germany if you're not a half-decent player. So the raw material is there. But there is this feeling with Arsenal at the moment, particularly defensively, where... you know, they're less than the sum of their parts, which is clearly, you know, a worrying sign. And I think when I used to try and think of an explanation for Arsenal's defensive vulnerabilities, I used to sometimes think that the Almunia factor was something that affected them, in the sense that when he was playing in goal, there was always this feeling I felt that the defenders were, a bit of them was worried about him and worried about what he was going to do, so they couldn't really relax and play their normal game, and it seemed to spread a little bit of confusion or uncertainty. And when Wojciech Szczesny first came in, I think that problem was addressed to an extent because he's a very confident, very bold player and very vocal and likes organising as well. And it did seem to have an effect. But I think what's happened this season is that, in a way, they're struggling for what's perhaps in front of the back four. And the fact that Arsenal don't have a kind of proper, authentic defensive midfield player who protects and who can intercept and read the game, what's going on in front, is clearly not helping. And Mikel Arteta did that role quite manfully last season, but he had Alex Song next to him. And I think the fact that Arsenal have not done anything to replace him is really beginning to bite now.
We should give a bit of love to Spurs, who actually won this game.
We definitely should, but you could say that we're talking about self-inflicted wounds as well, because I think the expression Groundhog Day has been used in so many ways that using it is in itself a Groundhog Day.
Right.
And when you play with a very high defensive line, which is what Arsenal did at Spurs, and you know, pressed really well actually until the first goal, you expose yourself to these balls which just go through them. And if you're not properly coached, which seems to be the case, the simplest pass can be the killer pass, which is what happened to when the goals were scored by Bale and Lennon. Mm. It was scored, and there were actually other chances for Spurs that way. And so that's one problem. This very high line, the lack of coaching, which is obvious to everybody, the fact that Thomas Vermaelen is not the best possible partner for Per Mertesacker. I think Mertesacker works much, much better with Laurent Koscielny. And Vermaelen, I don't know if it's the effect of the captaincy or what, but he's always been a bit of a loose cannon. He's not very disciplined, but he's not disciplined at all these days. The fact that Jenkinson was perhaps the best defender for Arsenal at White Hart Lane is also quite worrying. And also, I wish to support Amy 100% by talking about Alex Song, because everybody goes about how negative an impact the sale of Robin van Persie had on the team. Well, the team is scoring as many goals as it did when Robin van Persie was there. But Alex Song, who was also very good, actually, as a sort of low, deep number 10, 15 assists, if I remember well, could do the dirty work. And there's nobody to do that. Arteta is not one of those players. Mm. But Spurs were, you know, on the other hand, very disciplined, and people who think it's a one-man team are completely wrong.
Yeah, indeed. Could have been 3-1 had your man Sigurdsson not spurned that late chance, Barry. But now 12 games unbeaten, they're 7 points clear of Arsenal. Is it enough?
Well, there's a lot of points left to play for, but the way both teams are going, you would imagine Spurs will finish ahead of Arsenal. They may well finish ahead of Manchester City. I don't think that would be a big surprise. They've got some tough games coming up, but they seem quite well equipped to deal with them. If I could just throw my two cents into what my friends and colleagues were just saying, I think Hugo Lloris deserves a lot of credit. Yeah. Both teams yesterday played a high line, but Lloris is a lot better at Chesney, at coming out to sort of play like a sweeper, really, and clear up any danger. And also, the willingness of Spurs players just to run and run and work hard was quite apparent on at least two occasions. Like, there was one stage early in the first half, Kyle Walker picked up the ball in his own penalty area and galloped the entire way to the edge of the Arsenal 6-yard box and wasn't challenged once. The defenders stood off and sort of parted like the Red Sea, and then Gylfi Sigurdsson did it again later in the game to set up Gareth Bale.
Just picking up on your Lloris love, which I totally agree with, I think you've got to give Villa Spurs is getting a lot of credit for what he did with Bale and for sort of reinventing the team around him, reinventing his position. But also the way he's dealt with the Lloris and Friedel situation is another credit to his man management skills, because I remember being at Spurs for one of the earlier games when he'd first arrived, and the subject came up because Lloris wasn't getting in the team when he first arrived, which was quite a delicate matter. And he was asked the question, and Villa Spurs tried to be as diplomatic as he could by saying, look, we've got a great goalkeeper in Brad Friedel, and Hugo's coming in and he will get his chance, etc. And he just handled it in a way that, although I'm sure both keepers are finding it a little bit, you know, complicated, where there was certainly a period it wasn't entirely sure who was going to be number one, actually it's been quite a seamless progression from one very, very fine Premier League goalkeeper to another one who looks like he's going to be a very fine Premier League goalkeeper for a while to come.
And I think what was smart as well for Arsenal fans is the fact that Hugo Lloris would have loved to become an Arsenal player.
Mm.
And André Villas-Boas, I don't know, he's a man transformed, isn't he? I mean, when you think of the guy who was on his haunches at Chelsea with obviously players who, it is being said, trying to do as much as they could to oust him. The relationship is developed with these players. I mean, the image of those players embracing their coach after the win at West Ham, which it was a huge win, but it's a different Andre Villas-Boas. He seems to have integrated a lot of the mistakes he's done at Chelsea, and he seems to have a dressing room which is a very happy one at Spurs.
It's quite poignant, really, that we're sitting here talking today exactly 1 year after he was fired by Chelsea. So it's really come full circle.
Not so much poignant as just funny. Because he left Chelsea, how many millions of pounds did he trouser for that? His career hasn't suffered as a result, as we suspected it wouldn't. And you'd wonder what Abramovich thinks of his decision now to fire him.
He probably still thinks it's correct. There are many people who think that Roman Abramovich actually regretted having to part with Andre Villas-Boas, and that he considered that the players themselves, he couldn't fire all the players, were responsible for the state of affairs, and that it is with regret that he decided he had to change managers. There's something, you know, which is
Is it for that reason that a certain senior Chelsea player who many people are bleating should be given a contract and has been treated appallingly because he hasn't been offered a new contract? Could that be the reason why he hasn't been offered a new contract?
It's a very interesting question, Barry. Very interesting question. Spurs, anyway, third again with a arguably less strong team, a weaker team, I think people would call it, than last season. Can they hold on this time?
No Modric. Everybody thought, oh, no Modric. At the moment, no Sandro, who has been a huge player for them since the beginning of the season.
Well, most of the season, though. Yeah. Well, indeed. That'll be interesting. They, of course, play Inter in the Europa League on Thursday. Gareth Bale has a little bit of previous with the Nerazzurri, of course. And Inter coming into this on the back of a rousing 3-2 win away to Catania. They did actually go 2-0 down. And they came back 2-0. From 2-0 down away for the first time in 45 years, reports James Horncastle. Unique build-up to this match because Antonio Cassano, who's now their creative player, having got rid of all the other ones, actually almost came to blows with Andrea Stramaccioni, the young manager in the dressing room after training. I think it was Thursday, and they had to be separated. And Cassano, he regularly does this. The intervals between joining a new club and then having a meltdown do seem to be getting shorter each time. But after saying that Stramaccioni was like a brother to him, they had a bit of a sibling row, and he's now been dropped from the side. It was dropped from the Catania trip. And certainly, Amy, you're raising the question of why did Inter sell Coutinho if given the only other option they had was Cassano, who's less than a regular contributor to the side, and Palacio, who's been playing well in the Europa League, 5 goals, but was playing injured at the weekend. He shouldn't have been playing the whole game, but they don't have any other options. So there you go. Anyway, it should be an interesting game, that one.
Yeah, I mean, on the subject of Coutinho, I think that obviously when Suarez scores a hat-trick, he's going to dominate headlines. But I thought Coutinho's display was just
super
gorgeous,
game.
Really.
Yeah.
And he looks like... I just was watching that thinking, how can you be selling a prospect like that for really a bargain price of, what is it, £8.5 million, he cost? And
well, we'll talk a little bit more about Liverpool later on, but I have to say, I didn't think he... his performances for Inter hadn't suggested he was that strong a player, but maybe the problem was more the other 10 players on the field at the Nerazzurri rather than that one. Anyway, let's move on to the huge South Coast relegation derby on Saturday. Southampton QPR, what an important win this one was for Harry Redknapp, especially after those disturbing revelations in the Daily Mirror this weekend.
I think the word was disgusting.
Disgusting, was it? Disgusting revelation. Really
disgusted.
Surprising story, this.
Which Harry Redknapp strenuously denies.
Right, well, sources inside the QPR camp, who I may have been sitting next to yesterday, were saying that, no, that's pretty much what happened. But amazingly, they went to Dubai, and it was too hot to train.
They went to the bar?
No, they went to Dubai.
Sorry.
And then they went to the bar. But how about this? They could only train between 8:30 and 10 because it's too hot after that.
Yeah, you tell that to FIFA.
Yeah. And the other surprising thing was that they took a bunch of players on a mid-season break and they all got lashed up.
Really?
Pretty much unprecedented.
Right, okay.
Right.
The thing I thought was funniest about this was Harry's insistence that they trained way harder than any other team, up to 90 minutes a day. It was incredible stuff.
Right. One thing that I did discover is there were actually three other Premier League clubs out there which might have contributed to the spiral of booze and excess that supposedly happened.
But I believe Sunderland were out there.
Norwich were out there. I'm not sure who the other one were. It might have been Swansea. No, wouldn't have been Swansea. They had a League Cup. But anyway, there were other players out there. But they apparently
didn't train at all. They just worked on their drinking skills.
Still.
And Sunderland and Norwich both lost over the weekend.
That's interesting. Whereas QPR, having brought in a couple of reserves, Boothroyd and Rob Green for Julio Cesar, triumphed.
Yes. And Louis Grémy scoring.
That's true.
Yeah. I will confess, I haven't seen the game in its entirety, but the highlights I saw seem to indicate that Southampton had about 10 chances to one. Created when they went back to 1-1, created most of the chances. If I'm wrong, correct me.
All right. We were talking about Arsenal's defending. The Saints' defending on the second QPR goal is probably the worst individual bit of play I've seen all season. It was just a little bit perplexing. You had that man, Boothroyd, put through with one of those through balls, a la Spurs v Arsenal, and the two central defenders next to him, instead of closing him down or tackling or anything like that, ran away towards the goal. One of them might have been trying to get back to clear off the line, but neither managed that. And hey, presto, a big win. They're still bottom, Philippe, but only 4 points now. Only 4 points.
Only four points. Points is an awful lot for a team that has struggled. How many games had they gone without a win before that?
No, but this is only their third win. But they have got an easy run in, Philippe.
Yeah, you keep saying that.
Yep. It's an easy run-in.
Yeah, but what have you got in the easy run-in?
Well, you've got Sunderland at home this weekend. This weekend, actually, yeah.
Yeah, really easy, that, against another relegation-threatened team.
All right, you're being ironic, aren't you? A little bit.
Just a wee bit.
I think it's on. What do you think, Barry?
Well, I said last week I couldn't see them winning any of the games in this easy run-up you speak of, and they proceeded to win the first one.
Right.
And thinking about it now, I see absolutely no reason why they shouldn't beat Sunderland at home, because Sunderland aren't very good.
Right.
But I still think they'll get relegated.
Uh-huh. Well, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? Amy, Mauricio Pochettino.
Yes, I was thinking as I was watching, there's that always slightly awkwardness about seeing somebody being interviewed and then they have to stand there while the translation is coming across. And I always find it interesting just to imagine being in the dressing room if you're having to deal with a situation where almost anything that a coach says needs translating. It must have a slight artificialness about it. And I was trying to think about the last times that we've had managers in this country who have needed translating for us.
Who have we got?
Scolari when he arrived. Definitely.
That went well, yeah.
I think Fabio Capello when he arrived as well.
Mm-hmm.
Can we think? Dr. Josef Venglos, I think, translator, but that's going back a while.
Capello was one of those who.
Capello, and they started speaking English, and then you wished it stuck to the translator.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Capello was one of those who you really felt like he was using the fact that his English was supposedly limited, and I'm sure that he would have been much more.
There was a mystique about him when he was still impenetrable in his Italianness that sadly it didn't last beyond. Hello.
It doesn't mean necessarily that you fail. I might be wrong, in which case I'd be absolutely murdered, but it seems to me that Mircea Lucescu, who is not doing exactly a bad job at Shakhtar Donetsk, mm-hmm. doesn't speak Ukrainian or Russian.
Producer Ben raises the question, if the manager is using the hairdryer technique, say, at half-time, is that entirely rendered null and void unless the translator similarly enacts his emotive state?
Absolutely, that's a perfect point. Yeah, that'd be well worth being a fly on the wall of the dressing room when
Pochettino goes off on one.
Translator is obliged to rant and rave like a lunatic.
On the subject of incoherent managers, Trapattoni, of course, merits mention at Ireland because his translator, Manuela, has sort of become a celebrity in her own right. But she has this thankless job because he thinks he's much better at English than he actually is. Mm. And some of his press conferences are just gibberish. Mm. And the Irish football writers are just left scratching their heads with total bewilderment.
All right, well, Italian
cat that is out of the bag.
Well, yeah,
remember that's legendary.
That was
wonderful.
Kind of self-explanatory.
Don't say cat unless
you
have it in the sack.
It was not quite out of the bag.
But no, Italians wouldn't forgive me if I didn't mention that has similar issues in Italian.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
famously so.
Or Rafa Benitez saying that something stuck out like a priest on a mount of sugar.
Oh, that was an unusual one, wasn't it?
That was an unusual one. Mm. But on that subject,
Don't want to talk about Priest sticking out, of course. But
Hus Hiddink hasn't done too badly with the Korean team when he was in charge. I don't think that Hus speaks Korean.
Right.
And the Koreans generally don't speak English.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
This week on the Guardian Audio Edition, the Norwegian prison where inmates are treated like people. A day at Gladstone Primary, the school where they speak 20 languages. And in our audiobook review, we explore the world of work, with Dave Egger's latest novel, A Hologram for the King, and Oliver James's examination of duplicity and double dealing, Office Politics. To subscribe for free to the Guardian Audio Edition, go to audible.co.uk/Guardian or find us on SoundCloud, iTunes and Audioboo. The Guardian Audio Edition, a new way to get the whole picture.
Part 2. Now, what's happening on Tuesday? Man United are taking on Real Madrid. That's what's happening. Cristiano Ronaldo, if he's picked, back at the Old Trafford. And very, very exciting. Of course, they've already beaten Real, though, in the big contest. The really big contest this season. For the Asian markets, Barry. Real, I don't know if you noticed, they moved the Clasico to Saturday afternoon so they get on telly in Asia. But Man United, according to research or a tweet that I read, in all the Hong Kong bars, it was Man United that were playing on the telly. And, of course, with Shinji Kagawa's hat-trick, well, that's job done, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And it was a great hat-trick, I'm told, because as he scored it, I was throwing a coin over my shoulder into the Trevi Fountain.
Right.
And wishing that we could stop sightseeing and go and drink some wine instead. And that's what we did. So my wish came through.
It's a lovely story, right?
You missed the beautiful hat-trick.
Yeah.
It was gorgeous.
It was. Especially, I'm guessing you're going to like the second goal.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. I like the third too.
Do you like the third too?
I like them all.
Yeah, okay.
I think it was just a confirmation. He's had this injury. Again, his English is not particularly good, Shinji Kagawa. He's taken time to settle, but you're understanding now why he was thought of one of the most important players at Borussia Dortmund. You're starting to see a guy who is... who can play in so many positions as well. It's astounding. You can play him wherever you want. And it's the quickness of thought as well. I mean, the way that he took that extra little snip of a second to wait for the keeper to fall on his arse, if you excuse me, to slide it in an empty net, that was just... You just had to stand up and applaud. Magnificent player.
Will he find a position in Tuesday's team?
I should think so.
Really?
Even though, I mean, what would be your front four? I mean, obviously Van Persie. Was he perhaps Van Persie, Welbeck, Kagawa, Rooney? Wouldn't you go for that?
Brave.
Well, as Ferguson has said, he knows that Real Madrid will score, and I think we'd all agree that it's not going to be one of those nil nils.
I don't know. Could be.
I really very much doubt it.
Okay.
Well, for the one single reason is that Real Madrid will have to score to go through, so I don't think that it will be a nil-nil.
The stats would suggest both teams will score. Real have conceded in 8 of their last 10, and Manchester United have only failed to score in 1 of their last 19.
But interestingly, Manchester United are not... I think they only conceded 3 goals in their last 9 games in the league. So the defence that was leaking at the beginning of the season... sorted, at least in England. We'll see what it's like.
Of course, it helps when you have some shots to defend against. Optostat suggests that Norwich didn't have any.
Well, because they were prevented from having any as well, perhaps.
Oh, that's true. Good thinking.
I think it'd be pleasing as well. I mean, Kagawa was wonderful to watch, but Rooney's goal was sort of classic Rooney, really. And that's
and the assist
got to be
for Kagawa's goal.
Well.
Right.
I'm just wondering if it's concerning to United that... Van Persie's not been on a great run of scoring form. I think it's 1 in 7, which by his standards is quite a dry period. But
which began immediately after I'd done some serious tinkering with my fantasy football team and managed to get him into it. I don't think that's a coincidence. Sorry about that, Robin and Manchester United fans.
Right. Well, big game coming up then on Tuesday. Let's find out what Rail's preparations have been like with Sid Lowe.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hi, Sid. Where in the wide world of football or transport are you?
I'm not in any transport, sadly. Yeah. I'm just sitting at my desk finishing off writing something about Rafa Varane.
Oh, interesting, interesting.
Do you have your own sort of little study, Sid? And if so, what's it look like?
What does it look like?
Yeah, how is it decorated, or is it just the laundry room? Is there an exercise bike in one corner with clothes hanging off it?
There's an element of that. It looks like a massive mess. There's newspapers piled everywhere, as you can imagine. Books all over the place. Cups of tea from months ago hiding in corners. And then the one touch that does make it kind of almost properly a football office is that it's got lots of football stuff on the walls.
Right.
Like World Cup posters and magazine covers and stuff like that. My favourite is, I'm trying to think what my favourite is. My favourite is probably the, and I can't believe I'm admitting this after the last part, but my favourite is, I'm just going to get a ruler out to tell you exactly how big this thing is. There's a reason for this. You'll find out. Hang on. There's a ruler now. My favourite is, what's 18 centimetres in inches? That's probably what, 7-8 inches? Well. Anyway, my favourite is an eight inch vibrating headed model of the Bruges player Oliver de Kock.
Right,
and its head really does vibrate.
Okay, sure.
Put it
thing,
this way: so when I commentated on a Bruges game, yes, I did nearly die laughing.
What's his hairdo like?
It's a very short shaved job. Is that significant? Did he change it, or...?
Yeah. No, I don't think that's where Philippe was going.
Or is he thinking about kind of now? Friction somehow? Or?
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you could put wigs on or something.
Mm. Sid, that's fascinating. But what about Tuesday's clash at Old Trafford, eh? Return of the Ronaldo. But I notice, in your brilliant preview, which compares the Portuguese star to a can of spinach, that you suggest that the return to form of Di Maria might be equally as revitalising to Real's chances.
I wouldn't go quite so far as to say equally, because there's no doubt that Ronaldo is the key player in the Real Madrid side. But I think it's worth noting that the obsession with keeping Ronaldo quiet tends to overlook the fact that Real Madrid have other very good players who can cause you real problems. And Angel Di Maria is starting to come back into the kind of form that he hadn't really had early this season. And there were one or two problems with his game, and a couple of problems with fitness. I think on occasions, I sometimes look at him and think he's on the wrong wing. He'd had a couple of moments where he seemed to slightly lose his head, but I think he's really important. The other one, of course, that's really important is Mesut Ozil, who's the guy that tends to release those two on the break. And when you play on the break and you've got the kind of speed that Ronaldo and Di Maria have, then of course you've got quite a huge advantage. And I think Man United will be aware of that. I think they'll be aware that the best way to stop Madrid is to not allow them to run counter-attacks. Trouble is, the difference between knowing that and being able to make sure it doesn't happen.
Mm. Well, they're not a team that sets up to defend, usually, Man United, are they?
Well, in theory, they're not. But of course, you know, it was quite interesting listening to Ferguson before the first leg, and he talked about Manchester United being a team that come out and attack and a team that make things happen. He said, but at the same time, we have to be responsible and we have to not leave the door open. And then watching that first leg game, you're never really sure when you see a game like that to what extent one of the teams has decided to sit back deep and protect itself, and to what extent it's obliged to do it. And I remember a nice remark that Juan Malia once said about Barcelona during the first couple of years of the Pep Guardiola regime, and he was saying that it's not that you play how you want against Barcelona, it's you play how you can. And I think that's applicable to most games. And I think when you watch Manchester United be very, very deep in the first half, and you think, well, they're trying to protect themselves, but it's not really working. I don't know whether they really were trying to protect themselves, or simply they were forced into that position by Real Madrid.
Mm, it's true. The Spanish press, I remember afterwards saying that United had got their point all'italiana, if you...
Yeah, there was an element of that. I mean, you know, I think that was a bit over the top, but certainly, and there is an element, isn't there? I mean, you know, you lot will have seen Manchester United much more than me, but that Ferguson, certainly in Europe at least, has largely tried to be a fraction more conservative, play a little bit more on the break.
Right. Now, Real, of course, coming in on the back of a second straight win in the Clásico against Barcelona. What's with the reaction been like in Madrid, Sid?
Well, the reaction has in Madrid, obviously, has been gloating, as you can imagine, because bear in mind it's the Real Madrid side that had seven players who may not play against Manchester United. So you could argue seven first-choice starters didn't start that game, although Ronaldo came on and made a real difference. So that, I kind of think, reinforces that sense of having taken the supremacy of Spanish football away from Barcelona. Ridiculous, though, that sounds when Barcelona still have a 13-point lead at the top of the table. Then, of course, it's been analysed in Barcelona, and while there was was a big song and dance about the referee from one of the two big Catalan newspapers. I actually think most people have seen through that, and most people have seen that Barcelona do have problems, and that the referee isn't an excuse, despite the fact that he denied Barcelona what I think was an absolutely clear penalty in the last minute.
Sid, it's Philippe, and one thing I'm wondering is, how long can they carry on? I'm going to Barcelona here for a quick second, a quick aparte. Jordi Roura, I mean, that's a joke, surely.
Well, it's a very, very difficult position, I think, emotionally for Barcelona now. And I think, what do you do? Do you get rid of Jordi Roura, and who do you put in now? And what kind of message does that send when they've been very clear, Barcelona, about trying to say, look, what matters is that Tito Villanova gets well again. What matters is his health. And if they suddenly did that, then you've got a question mark over, okay, what do you do with Tito Villanova? How do the players react to that at this stage? Do you bring someone else in to make it happen? And I think Barcelona's mistake, if indeed it was a mistake, and I think it's difficult to be overcritical about it, because they took a decision based on a really serious situation, a manager who's had a relapse of cancer, not knowing how long it would be before he was back, not knowing how emotionally to best handle it, and trying to if you like, trying to kind of protect the club and trying to say, right, let's carry on with normality. Now, carrying with normality means let's give the assistant manager the job in the meantime. So I think a joke probably isn't the right word for it, and I think it was a reaction to a very difficult situation. But having taken that decision, I think it's very, very difficult for them to do anything else now except basically say, right, let's carry on, let's try and get it as right as we possibly can until Tito comes back. But no one really knows when that will be. But although they are talking about April, by the way, the start of April.
Sid, I was not talking about the decision as a joke. That would be a very bad joke of me to say that in the current circumstances. I'm talking about Jordi Roura himself. If I'm not mistaken, in his previous job, he was in charge of a third division team and was sacked because he was found to be incompetent.
Mm. Well, okay, right. So, yeah, I mean, Jordi Roura himself is in a really difficult position because, of course, bear in mind, he was Tito's assistant coach. What does he do? Say, right, I don't want it. So he takes it on. I think it is true that he is struggling with the situation. I think it's, but then, you know, say emotionally and also professionally, as you say, this is a guy whose track record as a first team coach isn't great. Emotionally and professionally, I think he's struggling with it. He said the other day quite clearly he has no aspirations to be the first team coach. He wants to be the number two. He wants to be the assistant, but he's thrust into this position temporarily for how long he doesn't know. So, I don't know whether it's necessarily fair to say that he's a joke of a coach, but certainly he's not someone that Barcelona would have chosen, had they been looking for their first team manager. But of course, the situation is an atypical one, and I must say I don't really know what the solution is, or even at the moment at which they found out that Tito was ill again, what the solution would have been at that point.
Right.
I must confess, now I don't think they can change too much right now.
All right, Sid. Well, listen, quick word then on Real at Old Trafford. What do you think is going to happen?
I think Real Madrid will score, and I think every other kind of analysis starts from that point. And because of that, of course, then the away goal advantage disappears, and I think the advantage then becomes Madrid because they're playing the second leg away and therefore can perhaps get that second away goal that pushes the tie further away from Manchester United. I think playing the second leg at home as an advantage is a complete myth. And I think Real Madrid are going to go through.
Sid Lowe in Spain. And while that was all happening, producer Ben was twiddling his thumbs, and he came up with something quite interesting on the whole translator-manager paradigm thing. Bobby Robson, José Mourinho.
Of course, why didn't we think of that?
Why didn't we think of that? Because we were too busy podcasting. Oh, Amy.
I remember a long time ago having the fortune to go and interview Bobby Robson when he was with Porto and spending a couple of days out there and watching their training sessions.
Was he young José there?
If he was, I didn't know him at that point.
It was
mid-90s. And it was brilliant because there was this real international language of football gesticulation going on where Bobby was just the absolute expert at shouting a sort of mixture of odd words of Portuguese and not that many of them with lots of bits of English and fantastic hand movements, and everybody just thought it was wonderful, and the players responded brilliantly.
Cool. Terry Venables as well, Barcelona. Don't think he spoke Spanish.
El Tel?
Or Catalan, for that matter.
Right. There you go.
What now, did though? Sir Bobby Robson call you? Amy.
Pet?
Oh.
Very good. Now, Levante, of course, are in action in the Europa League as well. They're taking on Rubin Kazan, who, of course, knocked out the holders Atletico Madrid in the last round. But elsewhere in Champions League land, you've got Borussia Shakhtar. Don't know how that one's going to go after the 2-2 in Ukraine. Presumably Dortmund favourites to go through, is it, Amy?
I would think so, but Shakhtar are actually not that bad away from home.
Oh?
And there's always that thing that people tend to throw at Eastern European teams, that they're generally, you know, less effective outside of their home countries.
Right.
But in the group games, they drew with Juventus, and they were very unfortunate to lose very late on after a fantastic performance at Chelsea.
So they had one win away in the group stage.
Yes, they had one of each.
North Zealand.
Yes,
yeah.
But their performances against the bigger hitters in that group, I thought were pretty impressive.
All right.
And I wouldn't say it's a foregone conclusion at all. I think that's a real good game to watch, and it's just a pity with the scheduling that it's on at the same time as the Man United Real Madrid game and the two games on the other night.
Well, that leaves Wednesday free for Juve Celtic, of course, which could go either way, very much so. Paris Saint-Germain, that is a tight one, isn't it? Paris Saint-Germain, they were cruising away at the Mestalla, 2-0 up until the last minute when Valencia got one back and...
More importantly...
Ibra got a red card and will miss the next two games.
Yeah.
That's bad.
It's bad for the quarterfinals. I really can't see, I mean, how they could fail to qualify. It's not the Valencia side of yesteryear.
Hang on, who could fail to qualify? Which one?
Oh, PSG.
You think they're nailed on, as it were?
Yes.
Okay.
I really can't see Valencia, current Valencia side, which struggled this weekend. I think they only drew. Am I wrong?
Well, as for this
anyway,
weekend, Paris Saint-Germain...
Domestic form doesn't matter in this. Because if you took domestic form into account, you would say that Valencia have got a very good chance given the magnificent performance of the Parisiens at Reims. Especially a team of Reims that was down to 10 men, and it was god-awful.
Right.
There's no other word for it.
Well, you said here, Beckham was pants, not Calvin Klein pants, Primark pants.
That's what I said pretty soon before the show,
well,
and
you
he decided
wrong.
To take the cat out of the bag, like Trapattoni would say.
Mm.
No, he only played for, I think, 25 minutes on that occasion, and he's not responsible for the fact that PSG were pants. But he was pants because his dead ball delivery was not good at all on this occasion. But it's the whole of that Parisian team looked really poor. Pastore in particular was transparent, as is his wont.
Has he had a good game for Paris Saint-Germain?
He's had a few decent games, actually, and recently hasn't been that bad. But it was one of those occasions where... Nothing seemed to work. It's a very odd situation in France. I don't know if we can have a word about Ligue 1 if you want to stick to Champions League.
Go on.
Because they've already suffered 5 defeats. It's the second away defeat on a row. But it seems that every time they falter, the people who are just immediately behind them can't take advantage of it. And Olympique Lyonnais, they were at Brest. Okay, Brest is an okay team, but Lyon knew that should they win, you know, here we are. We're back in more than back in contention. And they only drew 1-1 on one of the worst pitches. By the way, if you can find images of it, look at it. If you think San Siro was bad when Arsenal played in the Champions League last year, look at the pelouse of the Stade Brestois. It was amazing.
Right.
It was a gravel pitch on which there were a few weeds growing. Amazing. But nobody seems to be able to take, I mean, OM won, but with difficulty, and we know that they were going to falter. And if you look ahead, you see that the next game between the two major pretenders to the title, apart from PSG, one of them is going to lose points because it is OM against OL.
Oh.
Yeah, whereas PSG has Nancy at home, which shouldn't be a problem. Shouldn't be a problem.
Right, never mind all that. Let's hear about Leonardo.
And Leonardo said, Leonardo, by the way, who seems to get closer to the exit door every day, he said, I really miss Italy. And I think quite a few people in the PSG chain of command who would be quite happy to say, you miss it? Well, go there again.
Right.
And
5 cents off in Corsica, Philippe.
Yes, and everybody was looking forward to Corsican football clubs being back in Ligue 1, and it hasn't gone exactly to plan. I mean, you're quoting that. We could also say that in this victory of Bastia, 1-0 over Ajaccio, the away fans had to leave the stands and go to the middle of the pitch so that they wouldn't have stones thrown at them. The fact that the chairman of Ajaccio has filed a legal complaint, a suit, will sue, because of that. So fantastic atmosphere in Corsica. And in the same weekend, we also had the second team of Ajaccio, this is the Gazelec. Big problems there with the referee, Monsieur Chaperon, being, threatened, receiving death threats, and the matter also having to go to the judiciary. So it's a big, big mess. Everybody was looking forward to it as being this great feast of color and atmosphere, and in the end it's turning out to be just violence and nonsense. Utter nonsense.
Mm.
One last word.
Yes.
About Ligue 1, just a quick word about Saint-Etienne.
Okay.
It's a name that most of you will be familiar with.
Absolutely.
And I wouldn't say they're back,
but
they're now fourth in the league. They've won a very important game against Nice, with whom they're fighting for a place in the fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
Beat them 4-0. Unfortunately, suffering a big, big injury for Jérémy Clément.
Oh.
Double fracture of the leg.
Eee.
Out for the rest of the season, minimum 6 months. Mm. But if I talk about them, it's also because everybody talks about Zlatan Ibrahimovic and his exploits in the league. You know, it's 22 goals now in the league. But there's another guy, I think, unfortunately for Saint-Etienne, typical French problem, who is not going to stay, and it's Pierre-Éric Aubameyang, who is the player who over the last two seasons has scored the most goals in Ligue 1.
Really?
Yes, indeed, and it's exactly 31 goals in 62 games.
Very good. Very, very good.
Very, very, very fine player indeed.
Now,
that's 16 in dog goals.
That's also interesting, Barry. In other news, Middlesbrough beat Cardiff. How about that, Amy?
I'm sorry, I'm just stuck on dog goals.
Dog goals.
I just mean, it's like if you score a goal in Holland or France, you have to get three to be worth one in a proper league.
There you go.
Thanks for that.
Middlesbrough beat Cardiff. Championship runaway leaders, Cardiff, anybody? And Barra beat them?
Well, this is a worry for Cardiff fans because it's around about now they begin their annual sort of end of season collapse, end up in the playoffs and miss out on promotion.
Do you know what was special about this game?
No idea.
Amy?
Whatsoever.
Nobody?
Go on.
Producer Ben knows. Kieran Dyer scored a goal, put the ball in the net. First time in 6 years.
Ooh. Is he at Cardiff?
No, he's at Borough.
Or Borough, sorry. Yeah. I didn't even know that.
Well, there you go. That's the thing. Kieran Dyer. We used to have a poster who used to come on every time, and he'd always argue for two things. One, give a Champions League place to the FA Cup, and he would also always say, Kieran Dyer for England. Even he's given up of late, but Kieran Dyer's still out there, still battling away. Good on you, Kieran. Good. That's it for part two. Coming up in part three, posts, bit of Italy, and bit more Premier League. All of a sudden, it's got very late, so we're going to bang through this, hey? Let's start off with a post. It's quite a long one, actually. This is from Nikki T, but it's a great post. Wonderful pod, Nikki T says, featuring two of my favourite things, Gay Erotica and Eurovision. Eurovision should, of course, be taken into account when deciding on the timing of club football matches, says Nikki T. The 2011 contest was watched by a million more people than the Champions League final of that year between Man U and Barca. How about that? That's on UK TV. Also, a point of clarification, Cliff unfortunately has not yet won Eurovision. He was second in 68 and third in 73, but is never too late. And Nikki continues at some length on subject Eurovision and tips Italy for 2014. Great stuff. Nikki T's post continues at length, but good. Dante Mich Bosch says, earlier in the season, all the talk was about Milan having their worst squad in years and pretty much accepting that they wouldn't qualify for the Champions League again this season, while Allegri looked like a dead man walking. However, Milan are third now in Serie A and beat Barcelona in the first leg of their Champions League tie. What's changed? Well, indeed, one defeat in their last 15 for Milan, and that's very much the question. The answer, of course, is Silvio Berlusconi.
So since he's come back, he sorted
it all out.
The helicopter did it?
Exactly. Mm. There are... Yeah.
So the lady who was giving us a tour, guided tour around the Vatican Museum and St. Peter's, was very angry at her compatriots for voting Berlusconi in again.
Hmm.
And she came up with a good phrase, the mother of the stupid people is always pregnant.
That's indeed true. Indeed true.
Che bello.
Hmm. There are other factors, of course, Amy. I would say, I mean, there are lots of significant things here. They've had a good deal of fortune. They're very lucky to play Barcelona when they played Barcelona this weekend, a 3-0 defeat of Lazio, which had a lot to do with Lazio having a player sent off fairly harshly at the start of the game. Balotelli coming in, bit of motivation there. Montolivo finally becoming the player that we always thought that he might do. I think the biggest thing is that exceptionally young team, we all knew this, they got rid of so many veterans, so many of the players who'd been there and done that, and they bring in all these young guys, and not surprisingly, they floundered a little bit when they were slung in at the deep end at the start of the season. But now, not only are they getting some confidence and some consistency, but also they're just that much fitter, I think, than other teams at this point of the season. When you look at El Shaarawy and Decilio, who's been one of the outstanding players for them, the way they bomb up and down on the left, I think as the season wears on, you've got other teams that are not quite so young and fresh. I think that's been a major, major factor. You know, settled on the team, had a bit of luck. Yeah, amazing. Amazing how fine margins can sometimes be in football. No, it's not amazing.
No.
Yeah, it is amazing.
No, I think I'm really enjoying watching this Milan team at the moment. And you get the feeling that there's something in the air and there's something growing and that they have a shared hunger in the team and a shared desire to do well. And I'm really excited to see how particularly that the front line develops over the next couple of years. I mean, you think you've got three exceptionally gifted young players at their disposal in Balotelli, El Shaarawy and Niang, who has impressed me a lot in the bits and pieces I've seen of him. Mm. And there's something quite exciting that could be brewing there. And I think that's great because you associate Milan, obviously, with those kind of experienced veterans that seem to go on forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was inevitable there was going to be some kind of gap after that. And in some ways, I'm quite surprised that it's this quick that they've begun to piece together a new team that really looks quite strong.
Although their centre-backs are still absolutely venerable, Zapata and Yepes. Well, that's Milan. Should mention on the subject of Serie A, top four played each other this weekend. Juve drew at Naples, so they kept their 6-point margin over the Neapolitans. Everyone considers that pretty much job done. And Milan, as we mentioned, beating Lazio, so they are now third place. But there's only 1 point between them, Inter and Lazio.
Ooh.
Now, let's head back to the Premier League for the last element of today's podcast. Chelsea, Philippe. You were at Stamford Bridge on Saturday.
I was.
Yep. And, of course, there was lots of talk about what the fans would do about Rafa.
They did almost nothing.
Almost nothing?
Almost nothing. I mean, you had a few guys with homemade A4 posters or A3 posters with stuff that didn't necessarily make...
If they really wanted to hurt him, shouldn't they get plastic posters mass-manufactured and hand them out? Yeah, that would really sting.
One of my friends... Lars Sivertsen, to name him, from Norwegian television, he was thinking of doing his pre-match, you know, meet the crowd piece, making himself a homemade Rafa Benitez mask and asking the question. That's a fabulous idea. And I think the response, I mean, honestly, first of all, when he came on the pitch, Rafa, the, you know, reggae anthem of Chelsea was playing louder than I've ever heard it at Stamford Bridge. So it was very well synchronized. But there were no boos. It's more, yeah, you're there, okay. And then sometimes you would hear a chant here. Jose Mourinho's name was sung once. There were a couple of rude songs. But overall, it was as if indeed what Benitez had said, which was something I'm convinced was not a rant at all, but a very thought out expression of what he felt.
Mm-hmm.
They thought, actually, yes, maybe that would be a good idea to get behind the team, and which they did. But it was an odd game again, and you were brought back to memories of the 2-2 against Southampton, for example. You have a team which is completely in control, with Juan Mata being again magnificent, and they should have been 3-4-0 up by halftime. And then suddenly, 65 minutes, they let the foot a little bit off the pedal. Odemwingie's introduction changed a lot of things, I must say, for West Brom. And they had to rely on Petr Cech to save 2 points.
Mm.
So it was odd. You saw the best and the worst of Chelsea in the same game. But as for Rafa Benitez, all the protest and festival of hatred that we were promised never happened.
All right. Well, they're away to Steaua Bucharest in the Europa League coming up on Thursday.
That isn't going to be easy.
No.
And I'm looking forward to Mr. Bekele talking about that game and talking about Roman Abramovich.
Nice one.
Oh, man, he's something else. Even if you don't understand Romanian, right. I don't understand Romanian.
Ah, yeah.
Try to find interviews with Mr. Bekele. It's magnificent. It is magnificent. He's one of the great characters, as they say, in European football. Oh. And he doesn't like Roman Abramovich very much.
Okay, well, his Steaua, 13 points clear at the top of the Romanian league after a 3-0 win over Gaz Metan Medias, or similar. Newcastle went to Anzi Mashkashkala, and they're fresh from a 1-0 defeat to Swansea Barry.
That will be a stern test for Newcastle United supporters. The Russian government usually sort of ease their faffery about visas for football fans, but they haven't done so in this case. And Newcastle's officially organised club tour to the game has been cancelled due to lack of interest from the fans. And the game's been played in Moscow rather than Dagestan. But those Newcastle fans who do go will probably have to endure temperatures of about -8 to -12, which, you know, if they can keep their shirts off for 90 minutes for that, they will deserve any good result that comes their way.
Right, yeah.
I mean, just to get a visa in express service would cost £200 a man, and then you have your flight, blah, 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 hotel. Or it wouldn't, I don't know if there would be an overnight stay, but it's just very expensive to go to Moscow for a game, and Newcastle fans are not particularly wealthy, I would imagine.
Okay. A couple of other things. Liverpool winning, they look like a team now, do they? Or is it that Wigan don't look like a team?
I thought Liverpool looked very smart indeed. Mm. And the blossoming partnership, it's very early days, between Suarez and Coutinho looks like it could be extremely promising for Liverpool.
What would be reassuring for them as well is that Pepe Reina looked like Pepe Reina.
Yes.
Because he hadn't been in the best of forms, hadn't he? And this time he made some very, very important saves. But you have to say, when you play Wigan, you never quite know which kind of Wigan you're going to get. When they're in their stride and they're going forward, they look a wonderful. They're a wonderful team to watch in every sense, because there's always goals galore. And in that particular instance, they've got defensive frailties, as we all know, and Liverpool exploited them beautifully. I mean, Luis Suarez now is top of the... he will never get the Footballer of the Year award, but we deserve it.
You're right about Coutinho looking very special in the game, Amy. It's funny because after two seasons, or maybe more than that, actually flashing to deceive at the San Siro, it's a real surprise. But you wonder if he's going to join that pantheon of players who came away from underwhelming in Serie A to really light up the Premier League. I'm thinking Dennis Bergkamp, who didn't do it at Inter. How about Patrick Vieira? Who Fabio Capello sold from Milan. He's an 18-year-old.
How about Thierry Henry from Juve?
How about Thierry Henry?
There's quite a few. I think we could almost make an 11 of that. Patrick Aubameyang is one of them. Mm-hmm. So 3 years at Milan.
Yep.
Johan Gourcuff at Milan as well.
Of course, he didn't go to the Premier League, but certainly...
No, he went away and... Yep.
Blossomed for a season.
Van der Sar in goals, maybe?
Well, to be fair, he played much better in the Premier League than he did for Juventus. I thought he had a shocking time at Juve. Good shot. Yeah. One last thing then, West Ham, with a win away at Stoke, that now means, by my calculation, that the Potters have the worst form in the Premier League. 6 defeats in the last 8. Ay caramba. And after all the money Tony Pulis has spent, should we now be asking serious questions about what's going on at the Britannia Stadium?
I think if Stoke were to get relegated, nobody would particularly miss them much. If they stay up, there'd be a massive shoulder shrug to that too. They just seem to be a team that engenders kind of indifference. Mm. I don't know why
All right. You could barely bring yourself to answer that question. Yeah, Barry. Yeah. Exactly. All right. Well, on that note then, let's just salute the Hammers for that fine away win and say we'll be back on Thursday with all the reaction to a big, big midweek in the Champions League. Hopefully, that'll be a pod free of funny clicks and buzzes, which you might have heard during the recording of today's show after I stepped on a cable. Not entirely sure. We'll try and find out which bits got jiggly that shouldn't and sort that out for Thursday. Have a super week in the meantime. Hope you get jiggly, and we'll be back on Thursday.